As a child, you would wait and watch from far away. But you always knew that you'd be the one to work while they all play. And you'd lay awake at night and scheme of all the things that you would change, but it was just a dream.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Around the Gridiron, Around Campus, the Full Press College Football Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Berenger, rocking and rolling again with Justin Ryan Gonzalez. We're back. It's the offseason in college football, and there is a ton of things to get to. So much stuff happened since the national championship game. And the biggest thing, Nick Saban retiring from Alabama. Holy smokes when I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, that was jarring.
That was crazy.
That was wild. And it was so unexpected, especially coming off the number two recruiting group, which, I mean, now we don't know if that's even going to stick, but there's so much dominoes and, like, plus seven coaches getting fired and hired because of this as well. But it was just one of the most jaw-dropping moments I can remember in recent college football history.
I couldn't believe it. I thought he'd give it at least a couple of more years before he called it quits. I mean, he did such a great job at Alabama this year. That I was like, all right, he's going to give it another show. They built something that probably could do it. But then, you know what? Maybe he realized, I think he was saying that, you know when it's time. And he knew when it's time. And this landscape of college football is changing. He doesn't like the NIL. He hates the transfer portal. These guys opt out. Like, luckily for him, he hasn't had too many in these other bowl games. Like, I know the one year, like, Anderson and his quarterback stayed. So, at least those guys played. But still, I mean, like, he hates the transfer portal and hates NIL. And I think he's getting out at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he walks away as the greatest college football coach in history, undisputed. He finished with more national championships than Bear Bryant. He did it in this era, which arguably has been the hardest to win in. He did it in the 24/7 recruiting era. He won consistently by adapting, which I think is going to be his, you know, what he's known for historically. I think in years, you know, people are going to talk about how Saban adapted when a lot of other coaches in the SEC weren't able to do so. And he got a lot of people fired in his run as the Alabama coach. They couldn't beat him. I think, you know, never losing more than three conference games is a remarkable feature of his. His teams were legitimately in the national championship conversation every year except his first that he coached at Alabama. And, you know, what more can you say? He had the best run of any college coach in history. And I don't think it's going to be matched.
No, I don't think it's going to be matched either. Definitely the best run. I mean, you know, he built something at LSU. Then he goes to Miami, the NFL. Then he comes back, goes to Bama, the rival. And, like, that first game back at Death Valley was just unbelievable. Like, the atmosphere, that was just so good. And then what he did, like you said, he just got a ton of guys fired. Like, you couldn't, like, no team could beat Alabama. Kirby finally was able to do it. LSU did it in 2019. Lane couldn't do it. Like, a lot of guys couldn't do it. There's only, like, a handful of guys.
Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, you know, Gus Malzahn, I think he did it once, maybe. Like, once
he
beat it.
Yeah, he also lost, like, seven or six to him.
Jimbo Fisher hasn't beat.
Talk about how offense should be played.
Right, exactly. And then Jimbo's run at Texas A&M couldn't get past Bama. So, I mean, look, he's done so much at Alabama that it's really, really going to be interesting to see what this program becomes under now head coach Kalen DeBoer, former Washington Husky head coach who just took his team to the national championship.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there real quick. I'm just going to touch on one last point of Saban. You know, I also want to, you know, this is a lot for me, him stepping down, because he's probably my favorite football coach of all time, personally. And I've just really enjoyed watching him. And I've learned so much just from observing him from a distance, especially about process, striving for better, you know, how to attack and defeat mediocrity, how to not let complacency set in. You know, these are things that I try to emulate in my own personal life. So I just, yeah. I just want to thank Coach Saban for being a tremendous, not only coach, but role model for not only myself, but for many other people. And, you know, he really set the template for what an organization should look like. I always say he's one of those guys that I think, as great as he is as a football coach, his talent might have been wasted because we maybe could have used him as a politician or, you know, something like that at a higher. He's just so smart and the way he thinks things and the way he's able to articulate his message and really lead and lead by example and have followers. You know, I think it's truly remarkable. He's got to be one of the most talented, smartest individuals I think that's ever been in public eye. And, you know, college football is going to miss him. I think I have a perfect retirement job for him. They should make him the czar,
yes,
CEO or president of college football. You know, just specifically that as an entity, and let him oversee all operations, budget, you know, set guidelines for NIL, recruiting, the calendar, because I really think that he might be able to bridge that gap between the coaches and the administration and the fans because he's just a magnifying presence.
He understands it.
He gets it.
He understands the sport. Like him, Kirby, like those guys don't get it, man.
Definitely. And I think, you know, more so than Kirby, I think, because Kirby's kind of like a rah-rah guy. Saban's been able to articulate and get that message across. And just, you know, like I said, he's got that politician-ness to him. You know, he could have been a Fortune 500 CEO. He could have been a top defense lawyer. I mean, what career could Nick Saban not have done? You know, he would be a great professor, instructor. You know,
get the rat poison out. Like, just keep the rat poison out.
Of course, and bring a little Debbie's and a Coke with you. But anyway, to get to your point, for Kalen DeBoer, I mean, first of all, the first thing I want to mention is what a rapid ascent for Kalen DeBoer. You know, 3-4 years ago, I didn't know who he was, you know, and I watch college football all the time. I follow all the transactions, coaching. No idea who the guy was. When he got hired at Washington, you know, I was like, all right, you know, interesting hire, but it seemed like, you know, he was a shoo-in based off his record, which is impeccable. Right. Dating back to his D3 days at Sioux Falls. So it was an interesting hire, and, you know, we saw immediately he got Washington into, you know, doorstep this year of a national championship. And if a couple plays, you know, go a different way in the first half, you know, maybe we're having a different conversation about him. But nonetheless, now he's in the power chair. He is the coach of the most recognizable program in college football, the program with the most national championships, top five in wins, top five in visibility. You know, everybody knows the Alabama Crimson Tide. So, you know, I think all things considered, they had to strike quick, and Lanning didn't want the job. You know, they came away with the best hire, I think. You know, he's going to bring some of that recruiting energy that he brought. I think he understands the game, you know, like we were talking about Kirby, Saban. I think he's a forward-thinking guy, and I think he's a brilliant offensive mind. I really do. And I think it's going to help him in the new Super SEC.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, Lanning stays. Norvell stayed. Who else got that extension?
There
that
was
day?
One other guy that they were targeting.
Oh, Sark. Sark got his extension.
Oh, yeah. Sark. That would have been bad. I don't
think
I'm glad he stayed at Texas.
Me too. Like, so Lanning goes down, Sark goes down, and then Norvell stays. And I was like, okay, well, there's somebody out there that at Ole Miss that I thought might have gone, and I thought Kiffin was going to go back, that was going to go to Alabama.
You know, I think the Alabama Board of Regents, I don't think they wanted to touch Kiffin. You know, he's I think Ole Miss is perfect for him, you know, especially for the SEC program, because – you know, historically, they haven't been the best program, so maybe they're willing to tolerate some more of his extracurricular activities, specifically his Twitter stuff, which I think is hilarious from the outside, but I could see, you know, a president and some administrators not really finding that to be the best thing for their head football coach, especially considering the political component that being an SEC football coach is.
Right.
Because a lot of that job is politics, and you got to be, you know, in lockstep with the boosters, the administration and all that. And Kiffin seems like he's a rogue agent.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, and I don't know if that would fly in Alabama. I think Kalen DeBoer has a very good understanding of what the position entails, what he needs to do. And I think the smartest thing he said at his introductory press conference by far was that Saban would still be a presence, you know, that he would still have an open door policy, and that, you know, he wanted to seek him and seek his mentorship. And I think, you know, obviously some people might say, hey, you know, it'd probably be better to have the legend out of the building completely and let this guy get a clean slate and, you know, try to do it his way. But I think given the uniqueness of the situation and the circumstances, it's a good idea to have Coach Saban stick around for a couple more years. And I think especially with recruiting, it's a good thing to keep on board.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, it's just what happens in college football right now is just crazy. Saban's down, then you get the board to go, and now, you know, now Washington has to hire somebody, and it opens the door for the transfer portal and guys going into the portal, and that's just another subject of its own. And it's just crazy to think that what the board was doing at Washington, they're going to the Big Ten, and I know everybody poo-poos the Big Ten and everything, but they were building two power conferences here, and the Big Ten was going to be recognized along with the eight of the SEC. But you bring his talents to the most decorated and the most historic program in college football. Now you can take your game to the next level, and you might be there for life.
Might be, but he also has to understand this is a different kind of smoke now.
Yeah,
you know, being at Alabama, as high profile of a program as Washington is, you know, they had a few down years, and you know, you didn't hear about it at the national level. If DeBoer has two losses by October, that's your lead on every national story. The pressure is going to be ratcheted up
for sure. Yeah,
you know, whoever the Buddy Garrity at Alabama is going to be, you know, getting all up in it. And it's something that you really have to be prepared for, you know.
It's different. It's really
completely different.
It's a fishbowl. Like, I compare it to like Toronto and Montreal and the NHL. It's a fishbowl, and everything you do is under the microscope.
Definitely. I mean, no other conference has their media day broadcasted on ESPN and, you know, people talking about it. It's just the SEC. So, you know, we'll see how that transition goes. I think that it can go well for him depending on the construction of the roster. If they don't get pillaged by the transfer portal, and if he's able to convince some of those 4 and 5 stars that signed on for this class to stay, as well as some of the key players already, because we already saw Isaiah Bond leave. You've already seen Caleb Downs enter the portal earlier today.
Yeah.
Those are key guys on the team. So it's very important that he's able to retain some of the current talent and bring in some transfers to supplement who he is going to lose, which now he's in the second wave of the transfer portal since he accepted the job late. So most of the top talent has already taken their talents to wherever they're going to go. So now he's got to kind of adjust on the fly. There will still be guys available. He'll still be able to get people to transfer after the spring window closes. But he's going to have to hit on those transfers and, you know, make sure that he has this team ready to compete in year one. Because unfortunately for him, there's no ease in to that job. You know, the fans are expecting them to be in the 12-team playoff next year, especially because of 12 teams. Now there's no excuses to not make the playoffs at all.
No, zero excuses. And like we said, 12 teams, it opens up. There's potential for a 2-3 loss team to make the playoff.
Yep.
Because the SEC is so jam-packed. It's going to be tough for a team to go 15-0.
And the Big Ten, too.
And then don't forget, it's never easy to replace a legend. So they're going to have to give him some leeway this year because the Saban is just stepping away. But I like that he has his mentorship. And then you have Jed Fish up in taking the job at Washington. And guys from Arizona just hit the portal today, too.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's the residual effect of these moves, though, you know, and that's what a lot of people argued for so long was, oh, the coaches could leave whenever, but the players get screwed. Well, now they don't get screwed. Like you said, none of them entered the portal. They could leave. And, you know, Jed Fish, good luck to him because he's walking into a kind of a rough spot. You know, he is inheriting a roster that's losing the majority of its talent, you know, mm-hmm. no question. It's losing most of its key pieces. And similar to what I just said about Kalen DeBoer, he's going to have to convince some of the remaining pieces to stay, and he's going to have to fill in gaps. You know, their fan base, their team just made the national championship game. You know, they're probably expecting, too, at worst, to finish in the top 4 of the Big Ten and, you know, try to be in contention for that 12-team playoff, because you got to think the fourth place Big Ten team makes the 12-team playoff.
You would think.
Right? Yeah. I mean, so same with the SEC. You know, at least 8 or 9 of those teams are going to be from those conferences. And then maybe you have one from the ACC, one from the Big 12.
Well, you know you're going to get the conference champs. You know you're going to get the conference champions in from the other conferences. So,
and probably the losers of the conference championship game regardless.
Regardless, yeah. So, I mean, look, that's already, what, 6, 7 spots right there. And then whoever's at the at-large bids. So, yeah, you got to do your job here. And it's not going to be easy for either one of these coaches. And, you know, we saw Cam Ward hit the portal. He's going to the U from Washington State. That's a little bit of an upgrade for them over Trevor Van Dyke at the quarterback position.
It is. I thought he was going to go to the league, to be honest.
So did I. So did I.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be out of there. And honestly, I think he should have gone to the league because I think that his stock was pretty high, you know, coming off this season. And he would have at least been a third-round pick, you got to think.
I thought so. He had a great season at Washington State. I know towards the end it kind of tailed. Early on, he definitely had a good part of his season. But, you know.
We also got to remember, too, at Washington State, he's not playing with your top-tier talent.
No.
You know, he's playing with guys that aren't really that great. So, for him to do what he was doing over there was really impressive. That hasn't been done at that school since Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, so, I mean, and look what Minshew did in the league.
Yeah. So, I thought that he should have struck while the iron was hot and gone to the league. But, I mean, for some reason, it just seems like the U can't get it right. I don't know what it is. They hired Mario Cristobal.
I don't like that. I never liked that hiring. Because
no, you don't like Cristobal?
No. The problem is he didn't do anything in Oregon.
He had a couple good years. They won the Rose Bowl with Herbert, and they finished like third in the country that year.
Was Cristobal with Herbert though?
Yeah, I think he was.
All right, I have to double check that one. Yeah, I gotta go back and look at
Herbert's coach for sure.
Because like I just was not a fan of his coaching style though. Because like it felt like Oregon always just came up short in a big game, and I'm like, he's going to Miami. Yeah. I'm like,
I mean, that Rose Bowl game is the one that comes to mind for sure for a big win with them where Herbert was just running all around. But they did underachieve for their talent level while he was there. I mean, especially when you look at, like, how many guys he has that are in the league from that time and that are, like, really good players in the league. He definitely probably should have, you know, got
They should have done better.
Yeah, but, I mean, same could be said for Dan Lanning, you know, That's at this true. Point. You know, he should have been in the playoff this year. They should have figured out a way to beat Washington the second time, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, like, I feel like it goes both ways. But the U, I don't know, even with Cam Ward, they're probably not going to be better than Florida State.
No.
And they probably won't be better than Clemson, and Clemson's not really that good. So, I can't see the third-place ACC team going to the playoff or really doing anything. And now with the 12-team playoff, that's all that matters. I don't care about making the quick lane bowl or anything. Like, you got to make the 12-team playoff, especially for a national brand like the U.
Yeah, 100%. They have to get back in the playoff for them. They have to because there was no excuse this year for them not to be there. At least have a chance because they started off so well, but then they crumbled.
Yeah, definitely. That can't happen.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Cam Ward does there. But it's just, you know, the residual effects of all this stuff is, you know, we talked about it on another episode. Like, the portal opens after the regular season ends. But it really should be opening now, and I wouldn't have such a big problem with it because the national championship's over and all this stuff can happen. But we got to have a limit on how long it can be open, and it needs to close at some point, too.
So one of my friends in the academic community explained to me that the reason why the portal can't be moved, and I thought this was interesting, was due to enrollment for classes and for the semesters and whatnot. But my whole thing is, I think there needs to be some sort of academic flexibility with college football players. And I'm saying this as a PhD candidate in education. I think that the business model of college football is so unique that the players really honestly shouldn't be regulated. And in different ways, especially now with all the different methods of distance learning and stuff like that, you know, there are realistic ways to get these guys their coursework and to have it all fit academically. You know, I think these universities have to get kind of creative with that component of it. Now, will that ever happen? Probably not. But I think that there should be some level of flexibility just due to the business model and the revenue aspect of college football. It's not comparable to any other,
no,
you know, business in America, really, in sports or anything else. I mean, there's no other business that earns over $7 billion in revenue and doesn't have a CEO or a president.
No.
Or, you know, like, it's a wild situation.
So a it's a wild, wild west.
Yeah, and the craziest thing is that it always has been. And, you know, like, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, a lot of people don't even realize, like, at a certain point, college football was bigger than the NFL,
mm-hmm.
you know, was in this country. And what really was the difference in the NFL's growth and popularity and college football remaining popular but not as nationally popular was the embrace of television. The NFL was like, TV, come. Let's put all the games on TV. College football, they fought in the Supreme Court until 1989 that certain conferences couldn't have games on TV and this and that, all because there was no commissioner or governing body to be like, hey, listen, we can make a whole lot of money if you guys just all, you know, cut it out and put all the games on TV. So, you know, people missed out on great national games for years. And obviously, you know, we can't even imagine a world like that. But that was the reality of the sport. You know, who knows if they would have embraced TV earlier, what the popularity would be looking like today. It might even be bigger than it is, you know? So it's all these things that they need to be more adaptable and flexible as an organization. I've been saying that for so long. And, you know, what I'm saying with the transfer portal and the academic calendar is just an example. You know, we saw them come up a little bit with the NIL stuff, and it's great, but then it's not regulated.
No.
So it opens up a whole new situation. You're not even supposed to be able to offer NIL money technically in recruiting. And yet you got players on signing day saying, yo, I was waiting to hear my NIL package. You got Jermaine Stewart, the kid that's supposed to sign. He was signing. He went to Ohio State eventually, but he was supposed to sign at lunchtime in school. And, you know, he doesn't sign until 10 o'clock at night. Then we find out later is because the U was coming with a crazy NIL package. And he had to really reconsider what was going on. And I don't think that's what the spirit of the rule is supposed to be.
No, it's not supposed to be like that. It was supposed to be, okay, you sign with Ohio State. You can go get, like, a marketing deal that uses your name, image, and likeness so you can get paid. So when you sell your stuff, we don't have to, you know, levy out fines.
Yeah, it's like I said, they need, you know, some sort of governing body. And like I said, I nominate Nicholas Saban for that position because I think that he is the exact – I think he fits the exact job description that I'm envisioning for that position.
Or Nicholas Saban can take over the SEC and we can have Greg Sankey in charge of NIL too.
I would take that too. Greg Sankey's the man. I love Greg Sankey. He's great.
Greg Sankey is the man.
I think he's great. You know, I always liked him and respected him, but I gained a lot of respect for him when everybody was saying that, you know, college football was not going to be played because of COVID. And he really put his foot down and said, college football is going to be played in the SEC. You know, I don't know about everybody else, but the SEC is going to play a full schedule. And, you know, if you guys don't play, we'll figure it out. And we'll crown a champion because our league is good enough to do it. And I was like, yeah, he's the man. Like, yeah.
And that forced the Big Ten to play. And it forced the ACC to play, and it forced everybody to play.
It did, and a very little-known fact, but, you know, just want to put it out there, the guy whose event we met at, Clay Travis, was also very instrumental in that happening. He talked about it in one of his books that he wrote, but behind the scenes, he was working tirelessly with the Big Ten, Kevin Warren, political figures, you know, people involved, and he was a big factor in that. So, you know, I want to give him his flowers there, too. But I think Greg Sankey set the precedent for, you know, what they all were able to achieve by saying early in the process, we're playing.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. Definitely. You know, Jim Harbaugh is the topic of conversation, obviously, with a lot NFL coaching jobs opening up outside of Dallas because Mike McCarthy is staying. Again, I don't know what the Cowboys are doing. Jerry,
is that official now?
Official. That is official. Wow. Mike McCarthy is staying as the head football coach in Dallas.
That's terrible, man. They, I mean, that game on Sunday was so bad. I don't know how he recovered from that.
God bless him. But Harbaugh meets with the Chargers. It feels like Michigan's going to do their best to keep him to stay. He wins the national title. you know, we've debated it on numerous episodes. Does he stay? Does he go? But if he goes, it could open the door for some of those recruits to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, I think it seems like if he leaves, they're going to promote Sharon Moore, the OC. And he seems to be a popular figure amongst the players in the locker room. So maybe that entices some guys to stay. But I'm curious to see what Harbaugh does, because I think it's a little – I think my red flag is up that the Chargers haven't already offered him the job.
Yeah.
You know, why they already interviewed enough people to satisfy the Rooney rule. So my whole thing is, you know, if they know they want him, why hasn't he been offered the job yet? And I heard that he's really entertaining Atlanta because he thinks he could take J.J. McCarthy at 8 and he wants to reunite with him. Have you heard that story?
I have not heard that story. J.J. McCarthy is not a top 10 pick in the NFL draft.
So apparently he's been hyping him up in all his interviews and telling everybody that, you know, he's great and that, you know, he developed him and he knows that he's great because he knows quarterbacks. And there's talk that, you know, he might take the Atlanta job and draft McCarthy at 8.
Wow. I would be shocked if that happens.
Yeah, because they were saying that he might not want to take the Charger job because Herbert's already been with 3 offensive coordinators. And he might think, you know, he's like too damaged. But if he gets up, which I think is completely ridiculous, I think Herbert is a top 5 tier 1 quarterback in the NFL. And he's just the right coach away from winning very big in the league. But, yeah, that's what I'm hearing, that Harbaugh likes the idea of Atlanta more because he could take McCarthy and kind of mold the. I know it's crazy, but that's
crazy. Just the report I heard. That's crazy. I mean, if that happened, that would be. That'd be really nuts because I saw good J.J. McCarthy in the national title game, and I saw a lot of bad at J.J. McCarthy in the national title game.
Did you hear the Justin Fields report?
No, what's the Fields report?
They were saying that Atlanta might be willing to offer the 8th overall pick for Fields.
So that could bring Harbaugh with Fields, which wouldn't be a bad combination either.
That wouldn't be, but that'd be crazy if they traded the 8th overall pick for Justin Fields.
Yeah, that'd be a lot for Justin Fields. Wow.
He's got similar numbers to Zach Wilson. He just runs more.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like, I don't know what Atlanta's looking to do, but I'm curious to see what Harbaugh does. I'm kind of, like I said, I'm really, my antennas are up that he hasn't made a decision yet. I want to know, do you think he might be thinking about coming back?
He might come back, but again, what's the NCAA going to do? What's the investigation going to find? I mean, we know what the Big Ten said, but I think the NCAA might have more on it.
I think max NCAA would do would be 6 games. I think he'd be able to appeal it and maybe do 4 or 5.
Right, and they've done it, and they did it, and they survived it in the past. So maybe he wants to be the next Bo Schembechler, which is fine. But I know he wants that Super Bowl, like his brother has. I know he wants that. But there's so much talent out there. Like, he loves Justin Herbert, and he's hyped guys up. He is a good quarterback guy. I mean, unless he's making the rounds, and he doesn't feel like the situations are out there, but then why hire an agent?
Yeah, he did hire Don Yee, Brady's agent, Sean Payton's agent. I mean, we'll see. Listen, he's not getting any younger. He's already 60. And, you know, you can coach till you're pretty old, but I think that, you know, that 60 to 70 window is really like the last time these coaches are really like spry and are on it. You know, I think once that they hit that 70 number, they start to lose a little juice. So, you know, let's see. But I think he's got to – I'm curious to see what he does, you know?
Me too. I mean, it's crazy, like, this offseason in college football. You know, I know things have slowed down a little bit, but the portal's always open. Coaches are always moving. And we're going to have a new look next year with the 12-team playoff. So much crazy stuff, like, since the end of the national title game.
Yeah, it kind of feels like there was a mini season, like,
yeah.
And just with terms of offseason news. After the national championship game, it seemed like it just came after another boom, 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 boom. So, you know, like I said, I'm interested to see where all the dominoes end up falling. Specifically for college football, Harbaugh is the last one. And, you know, like we said, the NFL is probably on his horizon. You know, at this point, it's probably what he's going to do. He's flirted with it for too long. He probably would have got the Minnesota job 2 years ago if he didn't just, you know, complain about everything that's went wrong and all his previous coaching.
Yeah, drafts. Exactly.
Yeah, he kind of self-sabotaged it. So, you know, we'll see what happens. He's the hot commodity right now. And I think that if he does take an NFL job and find a way to win a Super Bowl, it'll be very impressive to me specifically, because he'll get himself in the class of only three guys that have won a Super Bowl and a national championship. Do you know who the three are?
Yes, I know two of them. I believe there are two of them. Jimmy Johnson is one yep. of them. Is Barry definitely. Switzer? Is Barry Switzer the other?
Barry Switzer is definitely two.
I don't know the third one.
He can get himself into that group, which is a unique group to be in.
So Harbaugh has a chance to do it. So who would have won a national championship and a Super Bowl? Wasn't Parcells.
Nope.
It's not Belichick.
Pete Carroll.
That's right, Pete Carroll. I didn't know that.
I was waiting to see if you – I figured you would be able to get it, but it's kind of tricky. But Pete Carroll – and actually, Pete Carroll's close to being the only double, though, 2-2. He was 1 yard away from winning both.
Well, if he ran the ball, he would have won the game.
Exactly. So he was, you know, he could have doubled up, Pete Carroll.
Look at that. Think about that group for a minute of guys that won Super Bowls and national titles, and they all did it their own way.
Absolutely. And Harbaugh can get himself into that pantheon, which, you know, I really think it, because that to me has got to be one of the most impressive things in coaching, to be able to do it at both levels like that. And like I said, you know, Pete Carroll.
Where do you think Pete's going to go? Think Pete goes back to college, or where do you think he lands?
No, I think Pete's in the NFL. I think he's too old for college. He's too old to recruit. You know, I don't know if in a fantasy world, you know, Lincoln Riley would, you know, leave and Pete go back to USC.
Yeah, and try
to, you know, go on a 4-year run.
Yeah, right.
I think that he's the only one that's, in my lifetime at least, that's ever really had that shit steer correctly. And when he did, you know, that was really the team that made me fall in love with college football. The Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush team. I used to love Dwayne Jarrett. I used to love Lendale White.
Yeah, Lendale White was such a good running back.
Yeah, those were my teams, man. So, you know, I hope that, you know, that's like the dream scenario. But I think Pete Carroll still wants to coach. I don't know if he'll be back in the NFL this season, but I could see next season him being a candidate for some jobs for sure. I mean, I think he still has some juice in him. He said it, that he still wants to coach. He said football people were not in charge of that decision. He made that very clear.
What about Vrabel? I know this is a college football show, but, you know, a lot of these guys are great coaches, and they could
understood the whole college football fixation with Vrabel. Why do people think that Vrabel would just pull up at Ohio State or another one of the like Tennessee and just
be
the man immediately? Why? Like,
he's never recruited, so I don't know what he would do recruiting.
It was the same thing with, like, John Gruden all those years. Remember, like, John Gruden to Tennessee was always the rumor? I was like, why is that, like, a lock to –
happen
something? Like, what has John Gruden done in college? Vrabel, I think he's a little overrated, to be honest. I mean, he's had a couple of good runs with Tennessee, but, you know, to make it seem like he's like a top five coach in the league, I just have never seen it like that. You know, I compare it to the situation with Sean McVay in LA. Like, they had similar roster construction the past 2 years. Sean McVay went through a lot of roster turnover, was coaching a lot of rookies, second year guys, and he had his teams competing, going to the playoffs. The Titans were terrible this year. You know, so it's like, I don't know. Like I said, I think, you know, Vrabel, I think he's a good coach. I'm not out here saying, oh, he's like some bomb. You know, I think he's a top 10 coach. But I think it's just a little overrated with, like, how great he is. He's not as overrated as Mike McDaniel. I'll tell you that. Mike McDaniel, like I said, I don't want to stray too much in the NFL stuff. But watching him lose and struggle in the freezing cold on Saturday night had to be one of the best moments of the whole football season. I can't stand that guy. I hate him the most, bro.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so before we get out of here, I know we've touched on some NFL. Got to ask you about Bill Belichick, his legacy, because him and Saban are tied. Like, they're like boys like this. So
they definitely are.
What do you think about his legacy and the decision to move on from New England?
Have you, real quick before I touch on that, have you ever seen the Saban Belichick docu on HBO?
I have. It's so pretty good, man. So good.
Definitely good. I like how Terry Saban just clowns the two of them. She's not impressed by either of them. I love that.
No, neither. Neither one of them she's impressed with.
Neither. I love it. But, you know, it's hard for me to talk about being a Jet fan.
Right.
Because, you know, he just hates us irrationally for no reason. And decided to, you know, completely victimize my team for the better part of 23 years. But you know what? He's going to go down as one of the three best coaches of all time. You know, before Brady left, I thought he was the clear-cut number one. But I think the fact that Brady went to Tampa Bay and won while he oversaw a collapsing unit was really an indictment on his coaching career. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's the Jet fan in me, but I'm just looking at it objectively speaking. And it seems like, you know, he had a career before Brady. He's had a career without him. He's coached 12 full seasons without Tom Brady. And his record's under 500 in those 12 years. But nonetheless, you know, can't take away from what he did there in New England. He implemented the system, built it from the studs. I think the most impressive thing about his run by far had to be that he did it in the salary cap era, which is just so much harder to do when you can only allocate resources limited. You know, he did it with different styles. He won with offense. He won with defense. He, you know, one week they'd throw it 50 times, and the next week they'd run it 50 times. You know,
right? Exactly.
That'll be his, you know, legacy. He was always, like I said with Saban, you know, and like you said, they're tied at the hip. But he was always adaptable. You know, he always adjusted. He loved bending the rules. You know, there's no question that he oversaw a cheating operation.
No doubt.
That's not the Jets fan in me either. There's facts. That's factual evidence. Supreme Court documents in both Spygate and Deflategate. These were legal matters. You know, that transcend football. So that's a part of his legacy as well. But, you know, overall, like I said, he'll be remembered for his coaching. And, you know, I think the lasting image I'll always have of Belichick was at the end of the Super Bowl game we talked about before with Pete Carroll and how he just let Pete Carroll just choke that moment away. Everyone thought he was going to call timeout, save time to get the ball, and he just stared at Pete Carroll across the sideline. Didn't do it. He was just staring at him. You could see the clip and was just waiting for him to crack. And Pete cracked. He didn't know what to do. And I think that just sums up Belichick. You know, his teams, they never quit. 28-3, they came back against the Falcons. It was terrible for me to watch that happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to give props where props are due. And he did it over and over again. So, you know, much respect to Coach Belichick as much as
It's kind of funny that within a 24-hour period, Saban and then Belichick leave.
Definitely. But, you know, the thing is, Belichick wanted to stay.
I know,
he wanted to be the coach. And I love, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's inconsequential. But I love that Belichick's last memory as the Patriots coach will be losing to my bum Jets in the snow and him walking off the field, freezing, looking like he was constipated. It was amazing. He looked miserable, dude.
Yeah,
he didn't
did.
Say bye to anybody. He looked just, it was great. But you know what? He's going to resurface this year. He's going to be coaching some team. You know, I hear he's a big candidate for the Atlanta job. He's definitely already interviewed for the position. So we'll see. And I think if he doesn't get that job, he's going to get one of these other jobs.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe if something doesn't work out with Harbaugh and the Chargers, maybe that's where he goes. But, you know, and he could win with a great QB. We've seen that. So, you know, we'll see. He's got one more act. You know, I think he really wants to get that all-time wins record.
Oh, he wants to break Shula's record. He definitely wants it.
Which goes against, you know, oh, the team, everything he always says. You know, he's dying for this individual accomplishment. But I digress. You know, he's, like I said, he's got, we'll see what he does in his third act. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see. And, I'm not rooting actively against him. You know, I'm interested more than anything to see what happens, you know.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be interesting to see. And the rest of this offseason is going to be really interesting to
Maybe
see.
Maybe he should take a college job. How about him on the recruiting trail?
Oh, imagine that. Phil Belichick on the recruiting trail. How great would that be?
Oh, my God. I think he'd get sick of it in 2 weeks.
Oh, he'd be done with it in 2 weeks. He'd be like, you guys go recruit. I want to be home.
The first time one of those kids posts something on social media about another school, he's going to be like, they're not loyal. I'm on to the next guy.
Under the next guy. Let's do it. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, again, Nick Saban's out. You know, Caleb DeBoer comes in. You know, a lot of stuff moving in the transfer portal. It's going to be a crazy offseason and spring games coming up. And we'll see other movement comes, but it's been a great year in a college football game. And, you know, don't worry, folks. We'll be back every now and then, sprinkle some things in for you. And, of course, we'll be back next year hard on here with the Full Press College Football Podcast around the gridiron, around campus with myself, Jim Berenger, and Justin Ryan Gonzalez. So, guys, don't worry about it. It's been a pleasure so far this year.
Definitely. I love doing these, man. Like I tell you all the time, whenever you want, whenever some news drops in college football that's, you know, newsworthy enough to talk about, we're on, man. That's it. You know, we're
ready to go. That's it, everybody. Well, Hope you guys enjoyed Around the Gridiron, Around Campus College Football, Full Press Podcast. Get it iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Take care. Enjoy.